If you're a Kanye West fan, you're not a fan of me, you're a fan of yourself. You will believe in yourself. I'm just the espresso. I'm just a shot in the morning to get you going, to make you believe that you can overcome that situation that you're dealing with all the time.
I believe that everybody should have the opportunity to share their views, however noble or odious.
There is nothing bigger or older than the universe. The questions I would like to talk about are: 1. Where did we come from? How did the universe come into being? Are we alone in the universe? Is there alien life out there?
God, who created this universe, if it was created by God, is quite clearly a maniac. Utter maniac. Totally selfish.
The people who are stuck, the people who are stuck in an image, the people who are stuck and afraid to be honest and dream a big dream. Dream big and dare to fail. I dare you to do that, because this is living proof that it is possible to make a dream come true.
Actually was watching listening to the Raph Barnett Ward episode in preparation for this evening.
Oh, good. I appreciate that. Thank you.
He was, I think he told you a little story that is somewhat close to my heart.
Really? Would it be to do with scams by any chance?
It would be.
Okay.
Obviously, I don't want to get too in-depth about what I do for a living or who I work for, but...
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I deal with bank accounts. So it was quite interesting listening to what he'd experienced, because the level of attention to detail that the people had, the scammer had been able to mimic sort of like genuine measures and stuff to, I don't know, get past... is, what most people would have in terms of a reasonable doubt, etc.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a constant fucking battle with those people, because the minute you introduce something to thwart what they're already doing, they're onto the next plan of action, if you know what I mean.
On the same person or the different person?
No, just like in general. You introduce a new fraud measure, and within weeks they've sussed out how to get around it. Do you know what I mean?
It reminds me of computer systems and viruses, really, and just how as soon as you solve one, another one comes along, I guess.
What? Yeah.
I'm going to pick your brains about this then, mate. So what are your thoughts then on... We talked about this in the podcast, but what are your thoughts on the people who do this? You know, you somewhat have access to some of the backdoor side of things in terms of perhaps you understand it more than other people, especially the general consumer. So what are your thoughts on the types of people who do this? Do you just kind of rate them, you know, as they are, just criminals, let's just leave it at that, or?
You're asking me what I think of the perpetrators?
Yeah.
Well, exactly that, really. What else is there to say? Scum.
Fair point.
I don't know where I could really go with it.
I'm just wondering, because I said in the episode, I just find it really hard to comprehend how someone has... I'm constantly surprised how people have the capabilities to do things like that, like any sort of criminal activity. I mean, we mentioned the idea of stealing from old people. It just seems... like, that seems somewhat worse than, you know, nicking from a shop, if that makes sense. It just seems so much more personal.
Well, there's two different types of crime, really, aren't there? There's crime out of necessity and crime out of greed.
Mm.
I think the latter of which you kind of have to be a bit of a psychopath to pull off, because you're making the conscious decision that your need to accumulate trumps not only the needs of others, but your own ethics. You know, most people can tell the difference between right and wrong. If you can't tell the difference between right or wrong, or you simply do not care, you are a psychopath.
I think there's grey areas.
Sociopath, I can't remember the difference.
Some people think treating your friends crap is okay, or they don't see treating your friends badly is bad. I think it's very minor. I'm pretty pathetic when it comes to that sort of thing. Like, I take friends and family quite seriously, I think you
do. We're not talking whether or not I ate too much barbecue the last time I came around your house, Nick. We're talking about defrauding pensioners for their life savings.
Was that when John came as well and we burnt all my old papers?
I can't remember if we had a barbecue that evening, but that happened, yeah.
That was awesome.
I wasn't drawing a parallel.
No. You've just captured my nostalgia now. We have a lot to talk about. We haven't seen each other in quite some time now. I think last time I saw you was in Norwich. I think we were talking about Star Wars in your room. You're back at your folks, aren't you? How is it? Is it okay?
Yeah. It is what it is.
Okay. Yeah. So you moved out, mate. Progressing along as you are, mm-hmm. working hard. Time to move out, flock the nest, and then you experience what probably 99.99% of people experience, which is people for some reason begin to take a lack of responsibility when it comes to cleaning public spaces when you share a house, a flat, etc.
I mean, it wasn't that bad. It was mainly just finances.
Got you. What, you want to save up or too personal or don't want to infringe on that, you know?
If you rent, you're just kind of bleeding money.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, at least if you have like a house and a mortgage, at the end of the mortgage, you might have the mortgage for 20, 30 years or whatever, but if you pay £400 a month, then by the end of it, you own a house outright. If I rent for 20 years, then leave that house, I've got nothing to show for that.
Mm-hmm. So you're saving up to buy a house now?
I mean, in theory, yeah. I'm quite bad at saving money.
Would you spend what you have? Would you say you're just a natural...
A bit frivolous.
Okay.
I live in the moment, Nick.
Unfortunately, I don't know if the moment gives you a house blow, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mate, there's loads, as you know, because you work in the sector, but there's so many different ways now that, you know, like, if you pay $199, the 1p goes to the savings or whatever, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So there's some options there if you want them.
Yeah, I mean, the main issue at the minute is that due to the sort of like health issues I've had in the last sort of 12 months and whatever, I've had to cut my hours right down at work.
Right, we haven't spoken about this. This is pretty serious. Tom mentioned it to me.
Yeah.
That you've, you know, been going through some rough stuff. How are you feeling generally at the moment?
All right, in and of myself. I'd be a lot better if I was still getting my treatment at the hospital that I'm supposed to be on. But
cancelled because of the situation?
Yes and no. Well, yes, in its entirety. Could they be doing more to get it back on? I would say so, but it is what it is. There's no point whinging at anyone at the NHS. You know, they're making the best they can out of the shit hand they've been dealt.
Yeah. Do you feel not yourself? Do you feel worse because you're not getting the treatment or?
I'm not doing so good pain wise.
Okay.
But that's to be expected. The treatment is preventative. So if I don't get my treatment, then I am fully exposed to the condition I have.
Got you.
So I have a chronic migraine condition.
Right, okay. So, go on, sorry.
So I just get migraines almost all the time. Painkillers sometimes work, sometimes mm-hmm. don't. And
what type of painkillers? Like really, like paracetamol, even, or ibuprofen, or
fuck. Ibuprofen, I don't tend to use. Ibuprofen's more of a muscular kind of treatment. Paracetamol can sometimes be enough. Sometimes it doesn't really do anything. The They've tried me on all sorts of drugs, because as you can imagine, you go through months and months and months of trying different drugs at your GP's discretion before they refer you to the hospital, because they've exhausted all possibilities.
Right. How long did you have to be on the drug before it was kind of like, this ain't working, like a couple of weeks? Or
It would vary from drug to drug, because some of them have a almost like a build-up window where you kind of have to, you know, this one you need to be taken for 2 weeks before it's properly in your system and going to do anything. So I've been on a varying combinations of preventative drugs and painkillers. The preventative stuff, they've had me on everything from like epilepsy medicine to beta blockers to fucking antidepressants, just all random shit that they don't really know what it does to the brain, but they just kind of hope that it does something. There's like incidental studies that show a correlation between taking this drug and your migraine stopping. Okay. They don't quite understand why the or how the drug's interacting with the brain to make that happen. It's just kind of like, well, it's happening, so let's give it a go.
Sure.
Sometimes.
This may be a bit sensitive, but I've never taken an antidepressant, but is it almost like a painkiller in that it just dulls the mental pain, if you will, or does it make the, I guess, happy feelings just feel more powerful or something like that? Obviously, I guess you're not taking these for that effect. It's more, you know, it's more for your migraines, so...
I don't remember them actually. They were the first things I went on. I can't remember what the fuck they're called now. But the antidepressants were the first things I went on, and they didn't touch the pain.
Right.
In fact, I think I tried them for a week or two and went back to the doctor and said, I can't keep taking these because they were making me exhausted all the time to the point where I was like lightheaded and falling asleep.
Just from taking them?
Yeah, just from taking them. I was like, you know, I can't concentrate on anything. I can't think of what I'm doing. I just feel like I'm going to fall asleep all the time.
Jesus.
But I wouldn't fall asleep. It was just like that permanent state of... I need to go to bed. I need to go to bed. I can't think what I'm doing.
Right.
Yeah, I'll get my words mixed up and stuff like that.
Do you have moments then when you have a self-realization where you're like, that's not, I don't do this normally. Do you know what I mean? Like,
it's like, you know that feeling when you kind of like, you drive, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you know that feeling where you're like driven a route you drive every day and you get from A to B and then you sort of get out of the car at B and go, hang on a minute, how did I get here?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, it's pretty scary stuff.
You weren't paying attention. It was all muscle memory sort of thing.
Yeah.
Well, it's almost a bit like that, except you're doing things wrong. So I'd be like talking to customers on the phone and just like get lost halfway through. Go, I can't.
Christ.
Can't think what I'm talking about.
That can really interrupt your work. So you're taking all this stuff, and then, as you say, the GP eventually is like, oh, maybe we should refer to the hospital. We've been doing this for 6 months now. It could be something serious.
Yeah.
So,
well, they tried then, I think after that, they put me on the beta blockers, and they were good fun, because I remember being at work, someone came and said something fairly innocuous to me, and I just flew off the handle. And I, like, stormed outside, calmed down, and I thought, why the fuck did I just say that? So she did absolutely nothing wrong. I was like, I'm not even stressed or angry about anything in particular other than being ill and not being particularly happy about that. So I went back in and, you know, basically grovelled and said, I'm going to call my doctors right now because I think something is wrong. And he was like, oh yeah, by the way, that might be a side effect of the beta blockers. I'm like, what do you mean? So, well, again, we don't really know why, but there is a statistical correlation between, you know, they can cause mood swings as a potential side effect.
Right.
Great. I can't remember if it was them or other ones, but he was talking about how, because they block certain pathways in the brain, sometimes they can interfere with the transmission of oxygen to the brain. Not to any life-threatening extent, but to the extent where your body starts releasing adrenaline instead. So that's why I'm like...
So survival stuff starts to kick in. Yeah, okay.
That's why I'm getting ready to fucking rip the head off of anyone who comes and talks to me. I'm like...
Got it, yeah.
Okay, well, that's not very helpful when I'm in a customer service role. Yeah, has my mortgage been agreed? No, fuck off!
So, about this condition you have, mate, does it develop? Is it birth? Is it genetic? What's the kind of...
No one knows.
No, okay, good.
They've not mapped enough of the brain or don't understand enough about where the condition comes from to tell me what causes it, which is quite frustrating when I'm having to kind of explain to my employer why I'm having so much time off and go, and yeah, I've got this thing that flares up now and again. I've got no real way of working out where it's coming from, what likelihood I'm going to have of success with any treatment, and whether or not that has an expiry date on it. You know, one day the treatment might just stop working and they have to go and try something else. So it's been a bit unpredictable that way. I was having a fairly good spate of, you know, being at work uninterrupted. The idea being I'm on reduced hours while I get acclimatized to the new treatment. And then once that's kind of settled in, look at returning to normal. But yeah, that's kind of out the window at the minute.
This condition, when do you think for you it started? Like, I mean, I'm now thinking back to Download 2016 when we went together. And we woke up that Sunday morning, I think, and you were like, we had breakfast, and then you were like, Nick, I've got to go back to bed because I just like slept like shit or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, fine, you know, like we've got all day, you know, let's just go back to bed or whatever. I just played Crash Team Racing.
Yeah.
I'm now thinking, maybe was that even back then? Do you think that might have been a prelude to this? Or
I've probably had it since I was about 10.
Right,
okay. In varying degrees. There's been some instances over the years where I've had to, you know, go to the doctors and say, you know, this is getting more serious, I need something a bit more robust in place. But it's always been, try these pills or whatever. And in the past, it's always kind of settled down. It's only in the last couple of years it's flared up to the point where, you know, I'm getting into serious conversations at work about, you know, whether or not I can keep my attendance to a sufficient level.
That's some pretty difficult conversations, I imagine, because obviously you want to, you know, be employed and earn money.
The weird thing is that I actually enjoy my job. So I quite enjoy being there, getting on with things. That's something to do for a start, you know, when you're shutting doors all the time.
Are you guys working in the, what's the sitch? If you can work, can you work? Do you work in the office or what's the, do you work from home or what's the?
So where possible, people certainly within my centre doing my job or working from home.
Okay.
If anyone doesn't have the facility to work from home or it's not working for them and it's not practical, they can go back to the office. And obviously, there are certain measures in place there. Everyone's got to be on desks so that are 2 meters apart and all the fucking floors got all fucking cordons and shit on it so that they've all got to follow in a one-way system.
About working from home, do you like that idea or would you rather go in the office or...?
I prefer it in that the things I've found over the years that exacerbate my head problems tend to be fairly environmental, and tuning the environment of your workspace to your liking is problematic in a room full of 100 people. So it has the added benefit of I can have the lighting at the exact level I prefer. I can decide what the ambient temperature of the room is to a certain degree. Of course, this week I'm fucked because it's just going to get hotter and hotter and there's nothing I can do about it. But generally speaking,
I was going to ask you about that then. So what's the things that make it worse or even begin a session? For example, is it like light, noise, smells? I mean, heat?
In terms of the beginning, I don't really know. There's no way of testing it, no way of put into it, sort of thing. I've tried keeping a journal and going, I had a migraine on this day and this was the conditions kind of thing. But by the time you get to the end of a month, there's no consistency at all.
Really?
What is consistent is things that exacerbate it once I've already got one coming, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So avoid the bright lights, avoid the loud noises, and heat. Heat as well is not much fun. I drastically prefer being cold.
Me too, mate. Mm-hmm. So, as someone who enjoys films, games, etc., you can obviously turn some of that stuff onto the warm light, as the most of them have now, to hopefully help a bit of that. But does that frustrate you as someone who, you know, maybe wants to play a video game tonight, say, for example, and then the migraine kicks in? Because I imagine once the migraine kicks in, all you want to do is sleep. But I don't know, because I've never really had one. So,
to be honest, when I said it's worse to the point where I need to go to bed, and I just don't care anymore. Do you know what I mean? Right. Everything else is secondary to getting to bed. But that is it sometimes. I don't have capacity for frustration because I'm just, I need to get to bed.
Fair enough.
Can't think about anything else.
Because you've got it, will that then mean you sleep for longer than usual or say, you know, 12 to 15 hours or something?
The sleep is a bit harder to give. to quantify my sleep is a bit harder in terms of the impact it has on the migraines, etc., and vice versa. And the reason for that is I also have sleep apnea. So you remember when we went to download, you had to share a room with me, and how the room would shake the very foundations, the underpinning of the hotel, because of my snoring.
Mate, I don't know if I wore earplugs, but I've got to say, I slept like a baby.
I have a feeling you brought earplugs with you because you knew what you were in for.
Probably, but same thing your brother, to be fair, when he stayed in my room, but I didn't mind it, mate. I've got to say, but... So anyway, you're saying, so sleep apnea is, that's when you, that's more than snoring, isn't it?
Sleep apnea is where your sleep is interrupted.
Okay.
Obstructive sleep apnea, which is what I have, is where your windpipe is obstructed during sleep, and the fact that you're not breathing triggers you to instinctually wake up. Your brain's going, you're not breathing, something's wrong, wake up. But you don't know you're waking up. But your brain does.
Is that when you wake up and you're paralyzed then? When you wake up and your brain hasn't...
No, I have had that though, and it can cause it.
That sounds horrific, by the way. Is it as horrific as it sounds?
It certainly was at the time. In hindsight, I just kind of laugh about it because I'm like, oh, my brain did a funny thing. You know? So the way it happened at the time, this was after they'd told me, we think you might have sleep apnea, which, and up until that, I'd not really considered it. My parents both have it, and they've all got breathing machines, etc., that they have to sleep with. I've got one now that's done me the world of good. But I remember waking up and thinking, I can't move. I can move my eyes, I can look around the room. I'm aware, but I cannot move. And at the foot of my bed was this big, swirling mass of black. Just like a cloud, kind of just wafting around and swirling on the spot. And I'm thinking, there's I'd say a good 90% chance that's not real. But I can hear my heartbeat, and I think I might be about to have a heart attack. That will definitely kill me. So I'll close my eyes and pretend it's not there and go back to sleep.
So you felt your heart racing because of looking at this thing?
Yes. I was not only conscious enough to perceive this thing, I was conscious enough to have this bizarre internal existential crisis about what to do. And I could remember.
Man, that sounds it. Horrible. So it wasn't a thing that you were looking at where you thought, my eyes do, you know, when you press in on your eyes and they start doing all the weird things and you open them and you can see all the different shapes and stuff. It wasn't like that. It was very much more real.
No, it had like a physical kind of definition to it.
Oh, mate. Do you think, so was that you were half asleep, half awake, or, you know, your body wasn't waking up and then some of your brain wasn't? So it was like a nightmare thing, or?
So we'll come back to it, I think, because I actually discussed it with the sleep expert and she had something to say about it, which I found quite interesting. So obviously that happened. Yeah. Then I went to the hospital and saw the nurse there, and it was just kind of a brief in and out. Here's the kit we're going to send you in the post and what to do with it, and off you pop. So I had a tube thing that came over your ears and you put up your nose, had a Darth Vader pack that you kind of wear on your chest sort of thing that sort of monitors you, where you're lying and how you're sleeping sort of thing. And I had a blood oxygen monitor on my finger.
So you're telling me that this, it can't be measured by a Fitbit. It needs more detail than that. That's a joke.
I don't know what a Fitbit is.
I'm just surprised because, you know, people are like, oh, yeah, the Fitbit, it just measures every single aspect of your life. I'm like,
is that what people say?
Well, they say it measures your sleep very well. So they say.
Me.
But anyway, so you had all these machines like Darth Vader.
Because this was it. It was getting to the point where I'd be, when I was living away from home, I'd be sat playing a video game. And the next thing I know, my roommates are rocking the chair going, Blah, wake up! It's like, what? You're snoring and it's fucking annoying. No, I'd like fallen asleep in the armchair with my controller like on the floor, just like in front of the TV, and it's like 9 p.m.
Right. I'm like, right. So you just kind of lose consciousness or fall asleep.
Yeah, I've been like, you know, I would play video games until 3 a.m. and have 4 hours sleep and be fine. What's going on here? Do you know what I mean? Something is not right. You know, so I'd go to the, so eventually went to the hospital to get the results of the sleep test, which is what the pack and gizmos was for.
Okay. Was this before, you had the sleep apnea diagnosis?
Yeah. This was to find out if I've got it or not, based on the pack they sent me and I slept with. Because it used to be, back when my dad was diagnosed, they'd send you off to a clinic, like at Adam Brooks or somewhere, you know, miles away, and you'd have to spend the night in the hospital bed with all this shit strapped to you and a giant fucking machine the size of a person next to you, whereas nowadays they can fit it all into the equivalent of a pencil case and you just kind of wear it around your chest kind of thing. But you know, you're talking 15 years ago for that anyway. I digress. So I went in for the results and she goes, well, yes, you have sleep apnea. You have one of the worst sets of results I've ever treated. So obviously there are lots of different stats that this machine was tracking throughout the night. And on average, I was waking up 92 times a minute. No, not a minute. An hour, sorry. So that's more than once a minute. And 83 of those were due to cardio obstructions.
So, and that's every night?
Well, that was the night they did. That was the average.
The test. Mate, I can't even comprehend that. I'm surprised you ever felt like you had any sleep.
I never did. That was the point. I'd wake up tired and just be tired throughout the day.
But when you were sleeping, you were never like, I guess, I don't know what question to ask. Like, were you just waking up constantly, or was it just small enough that you didn't realise it was being interrupted, but it wasn't, you know, full awake kind of thing?
I was awake, but not conscious.
Okay. Oh, God.
The only time I can remember was the incident with the swollen black mass. So I said to her, well, obviously I've been tired all the time and I keep forgetting things, can it cause hallucinations? She said, well, what do you mean? So I told her what happened. She says, well, you're describing sleep paralysis, which doesn't occur all that often. You might never ever experience it again, but it's again, we're getting into Alex Jones territory here.
That's okay with me.
So she's like, when your brain is deprived of oxygen or not getting a sufficient supply of oxygen, i.e. because I'm choking, the brain can release what's called DMT, which is what if the brain is meant to release when we're asleep. It's what gives you dreams and stuff. So when I am waking up, when my body thinks it should be asleep, there's still DMT in my head when there shouldn't be. And that's why I'm seeing shit that isn't there, because my brain's dreaming while it's awake.
That sounds like a horror film.
I'm just lucky I didn't see the interdimensional vampires.
Don't get me wrong. I'm sure this swirling black mass was horrific, but imagine if you had like a whole nightmare play out at the foot of your bed. That sounds like, that would probably scar me for life, truly. Truly. That's horrific.
I'll see you in your dreams, Nick.
So you get the machine. You know these machines then you guys have?
Mm-hmm.
Are they really loud and stuff? Or I mean, obviously, you know, they help you sleep, so you have them. It's whatever. But are they loud and stuff? Or
I've gotten used to kind of sleeping with noises and stuff.
Because of the machine or?
Just in general. I quite often listen to podcasts and stuff when I go to bed, or I'll put on like Star Wars theory or something like that. And sure. Just kind of listen to nonsense about rubbish that's happened in the comics or something, and then just kind of fall asleep to that because it lets my mind just wander. So the breathing machine doesn't really affect me anyway. A, I can't hear it, and B, if I could do it, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm sorry to hear all about this, mate. I feel for you. I don't know what it's like, but I feel for you.
It's good fun, isn't it?
I feel like if I was you, I would be the embodiment of Scrooge at all times. I'd just be the grumpiest person ever.
Well, I am. Ask anyone.
But you're more lighthearted than you let out to be.
I know. I'm more lighthearted than people give me credit for, Nick. I am a joy to be around.
You're a softie.
I am a joy to be around.
Apart from, you know, when you insult me, which is at all times, that's probably the hardest you get. But I can take it.
You're like a condom. You just need to be ribbed from time to time.
I'm just so gullible. You'll just be like, yeah, Nick, no, that's not PMS. That's what you got. Oh, right, okay, cool. Okay. Wait, what? Yeah. I'd be considered homophobic, racist, and stupid just for,
if you have
questioning the patriarchy,
if you haven't
perhaps
donned a picket and tried to use it to saw off the head of the nearest statue in your general vicinity, then you are by definition a right-wing extremist.
Oh man, it's so funny because all these left-wing people are walking around like brown shirts. It's very interesting, very interesting, making me have certain thoughts, certain political opinions. Yep. It's interesting.
In order to fight right-wing extremism and fascism, we should ban certain ideas and certain words and compel certain types of speech. It's an interesting idea, kid.
Do you think that movement, sorry to distract, but do you think that movement is gaining more pace because of recent events? I thought before the racism event happened in America that it was actually starting to die down, this left-wing chaos, to be honest.
No, I don't think it's getting any bigger. I think it's always been bigger than people have thought. And okay. I base that on, I don't know how much time you tend to spend on the internet, but if you want to get a real kind of feel for, keep your finger on the pulse of something before it breaks into the mainstream media, the internet is the place to do it. Because, these people have been around and been doing this kind of shit for the best part of 10 years. Showing up to rallies. Not rallies, really. You'll have someone who's written a book and they come to a university to do a talk. Well, Black Lives Matter show up because they don't like them and they'll ring the fire bell. So the speaker has to come out. Everyone in the auditorium has to come outside and they've all got to sit there for an hour and fart about. Well, these people are just causing chaos. Because if you give a platform to someone I disagree with, you're empowering that person and that means that, they're propagating racism. So what? Yeah. What? I was always under the impression, until I actually saw what university students had become, that you went to university to encounter new ideas and expand your horizons. Seems more to me like they've just become echo chambers.
I went to a seminar once where I spoke about the severity of black-on-black violence, and a black student next to me said, I think you've just made that up to justify racism.
These are statistics published by the UK government. I don't care what statistics say. Okay.
Mate, I could tell you some stories, man, of some of the seminars I've been in at uni. For the most part, I liked a lot of the content we did, especially the sex ethics stuff is really interesting, how do you define sex and that sort of stuff, mm-hmm. right? But some of the seminars we did, I'm not going to go names, maybe I'll cut this piece out, I don't know, but we got to a point where a lecturer of a module, she was hosting the seminar and we were discussing personal identity, and do you have a right to express your personality, personal identity in a workplace the same, because it has the same meaningfulness as religion? That's kind of the broad strokes of the discussion. And then I wasn't even like this. One of the guys who even is, probably lighter, considered lighter than me in his severity of his right-wing stuff, even though I'm not really right wing. And he was like, well, no, I consider religion more meaningful in that context in terms of I'm going to wear a whatever because it's my religion than just my personal identity and having to need tattoos and ear piercings because that seems, you know, more, that seems...
More people believe this fairy tale, so it's more important to wear.
Something like that, right? Something like religion seems like a more substantial reason to have to wear certain things out the workplace. Yeah. And the lecturer then proceeded to get so angry, she basically walked out and started arguing with the student about this discussion.
How dare you have a different opinion? You racist.
It was pretty much how dare you think that religion is more important than personal identity expression.
Was this student a person of colour?
No.
Was this student trans?
No.
Was this student any sexuality other than hetero?
Don't think. I mean, maybe, but not from...
Well, in the absence of evidence to the contrary, we shall assume no. The problem this student has is that it does not have any of the get-out-of-jail-free cards that you can use when debating left wings.
Sure.
Because they just won't go after certain subgroups because they're racists.
My question for you, Blore, is that I think me and you have very similar stances on a lot of this discussion, probably. Right?
Speaking of echo chambers.
But after the events that happened with George Floyd, it's George Floyd, isn't it? I have to say that perhaps I am now considering that maybe there is some real racism within some of the systems in the USA, maybe other systems as well. I'm not saying the UK, but I'm asking you because... For a long time, I also thought that maybe it's a socioeconomic issue, not perhaps a racial thing. But
I have a hard time with this idea of systemic racism or systemic sexism, because when I hear the word systemic, I interpret that to mean enshrined within the system, i.e., law. And I can tell you for absolute fucking certainty that if we look at George Floyd, it's going to be the American Constitution, isn't it? There is nothing in the American Constitution that says, you know, it's open season on killing black men. Black men do not matter when it comes to the processes of law. You know, there's nothing in there that says, you know, and the 47th Amendment is that women shall be paid 66 cents to the dollar, which is a horse shit statistic, by the way.
Yeah, it really is.
So when you say systemic racism, is that what you mean? Or are you talking about people who work within the system happen to be racist, which statistically is almost certain?
So how do you solve that second problem that you identified? How do you just take it on a case-by-case basis and make sure that justice is served, so to speak? Or
you're talking about thwarting racism or... What's your question? What are you getting at? I don't understand.
Yeah. How do you thwart those individual cases of, for example, police officers being racist or committing such racist acts as almost, you know, well, killing black people?
I don't see how you could conscientiously do it any way other than on a case-by-case basis. If you don't... What's the alternative to doing it on a case-by-case basis? You just say that whenever a white cop... Whenever a black dude dies in police custody and the policeman is not black, that they are automatically murderers? Like, what other criteria can you use than to look at it, that each case on its own merits?
What would you say then if a case like that happened and then he got a less harsh sentence than someone who did an equal killing of colour or something like that, or the judge was also considered to let the cop off, maybe with manslaughter or something, I don't know. But like in a hypothetical case like that, what would your reaction be?
I don't see how you could have a hypothetical identical murder short of you have a black dude and a white dude that are hanging out and they're both killed by the same person during a home invasion. Do you know what I mean? Like, if they're murdered by the same person at the same time and he gets two different sentences for each murder, because obviously certainly in the American legal system, they'll stack the charges. So they'll be, you know, you're being charged with murder in the first degree, murder in the second degree, blah, blah, blah. If it's murder in the first degree for both people and he gets two different sentences, then I'd be like, well, what the fuck is that? But then again, unless... The thing is... Again, this is something that is not new. It just, everything seems to be bubbling to the surface of mainstream consciousness at the moment. Police brutality. Again, if you've spent enough time on the internet and sort of, you know, tune into these kind of things, police brutality in America, full stop, race aside, has been out of control for the last 10 years. But the police have always covered for each other. That's been the main obstacle in dealing with it. This bloke will, you know, pin a black dude in the street and smash his head to the pavement until he's dead. And the worst he gets is paid administrative leave while it's investigated. And then the media hype dies down and a year or two later he's back at work and he's doing the exact same shit again. But the same happens to white people, Hispanics, Asians. I don't know if Asian is the political correct term anymore. I can't keep up with the...
What else would it be? Is there different Asian territories that we have
Asia effectively covers both the Middle East and what would have been called the Orient, but I was told the other day that Oriental is racist now, so... Ultimately, I think that racism will always be a problem so long as either side is perceiving issues through the lens of race.
What if the issues are because of race and it's not just perception?
I don't think any issue is caused by race. I think there are shitty people of every race, gender, and sexuality. And I think the problem is exacerbated because they're the only people that really seem to get any kind of press attention. They're the only people that get press attention because it's the only kind of shit that people seem to pay attention to. It gets the views, it gets the clicks. So we'll hone in on that more. The lens of mainstream media focuses on the negative because that's what sustains them.
I don't know about you, but I think that the mainstream media is... probably outdated, but I'm not quite sure how you solve the issue that is them reporting with extreme bias. I mean, you probably don't solve that issue. There is bias there. But, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the American news streams are so biased that it's pretty much propaganda to me.
I'd say the same is becoming more and more apparent with the UK as well. Certainly the BBC. I mean, and I say that as someone who tends to agree with most of the views posited by the BBC, but again, that's not their role. If I take a step back from my own views and go, hang on a minute, you shouldn't really be doing that. Again, I've not prepared any examples or sources or anything because I'm just kind of spitballing here, but you know, in America, it's farcical. You've got Fox News, which just fucking whatever right-wing talking point is there for the day, that's it. And whatever happens in the world, the default right-wing position is what is. And that's it. Whereas on CNN, I was in America for the last election.
Really?
Yep, we went to Disney World.
How was it?
Well, it was Florida. And there were lots of theme parks. So it was good fun. To be honest.
You love your family love theme parks. We saw each other at Alton Towers that one time on the wedding day.
Yeah, that was pretty fun. The royal wedding.
Oh, everyone's seen the wedding. Let's fucking go to Alton Towers.
Everyone thought, we'll go to Alton Towers because it'll be quiet because of the royal wedding. Unfortunately, everyone had that idea, so it was packed.
And people also turned up to watch the royal wedding there. Why would you bother?
Yeah, we're going to sit on the lawn at Alton Towers and watch something we could have watched from the comfort of our own home. But we're going to pay £50 a head for the privilege. This is a nice lawn.
Nice grass.
This is a nice lawn. Anyway, so what was I saying? I feel like we're...
BBC News, bad examples. Yeah,
the problem with media bias is never going to correct itself unless it's addressed. Because on paper, all of these fucking outlets are still impartial. You can't tell me that CNN... So this is why I bring up being in America for the election. I went to bed on the night of the actual vote. And I had CNN on. And I fell asleep to CNN. And the map, they quite often have the, you know, map of the states or whatever, and they colorize them as they go based on the results coming in and the polls and the predictions, and they'll try and tell you what the result's going to be. So CNN had it 100%. Hillary's got it in the bag.
100%?
Well, not 100% of the vote, but with 100% certainty, Hillary's got it in the bag. There's no way Trump can win, end of. So okay, I was like, great, fine, whatever. And don't get me wrong, I think Trump's just as bad as Hillary when you kind of toss the two up. You know, Hillary was the devil you know versus what's behind mystery box number one. Because Trump talks a lot of good shit. Is he going to follow through on any of it? And the answer is no, he just did a bunch of other heinous shit instead. I went to bed with CNN on. The map all blue and, you know, Hillary's our queen, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, they had the auditorium up with the glass ceiling ready for her to smash. The literal glass ceiling, Nick. Can't get any more fucking, what's the word? Narcissistic. I am the spokesperson for all women. I have decided this. Goodbye. And when I woke up in the morning... The news anchors were crying. And the headline was, Trump elected president. I mean, you can't call yourself impartial if you're crying over the election result. And you're just preaching doom and gloom, doom and gloom. We've got a Republican in the White House, doom and gloom. That's not impartial. I mean, turns out they were right. Doesn't make them impartial.
What's interesting is that they keep being... I almost thrive off the left Hollywood just absolutely gobsmack that anyone could possibly vote for this horrible human being without considering anyone's real individual situations in terms of job loss, economic... situation, etc. And I'm not justifying voters, I'm just kind of,
It's all part of the same problem, in my opinion. This crosses industries. It's not just politics. It's not just movies, the video game industry. I think people who are in these industries tend to have some sort of college or university education. They've gone through that system. They are used to being in an echo chamber where they sniff their own farts and everyone agrees with them. And anyone who disagrees with them must be doing so because they're a racist, a misogynist, or a transphobe. Or a homophobe. Yep. So when you then send them out into the world and they make this, either a election campaign where, you know, Hillary's crowned herself president 6 months in advance, what they called is it the GDC or the C? Who the fuck runs the Democratic Party? Picks the nominee.
Is it the DDC?
I think it's the GDC. I could be wrong.
Democratic Committee or something like that.
Whatever they're called. Twice now, they've ripped the rug out from Bernie. And I genuinely believe that Bernie is the only one who could have given Trump a run for his money.
Yeah.
But again,
was Bernie in the popular vote again for this second, for this second attempt with the Democrats? Do we know? As in, was he primed to win the popular vote but lost against the, these committee or whatever the fuck?
You're talking about Bernie? Yeah. I don't know, because there's all shady shit that goes on behind closed doors. But, you know, they just kind of turn around and say, right, we're crowning Hillary president as well. You know, end of. We have decided. And people are like, no. I'm pretty sure Trump won the last election because all the Bernie followers went, now I've had enough of this, let's just press the big red button and see what happens.
100%, mate. 100%.
And I have a feeling they'll do the same thing again this time. But nope, you haven't had enough of Armageddon. You can have some more until you learn your fucking lesson. Anyway, what was I talking about? I feel like that was another digression.
No, I'm glad we touched on it, mate, because I feel like I feel like a lot of people aren't quite getting why other people are voting certain ways, and that can be quite dangerous. Yep. When people not only don't understand or try, but don't try to understand.
On one side, you've got one lot that are convinced that everyone who disagrees with them is Tommy Robinson, right? And then on that side, they're all convinced that everyone who disagrees with them is Karl Marx.
Yes, sure.
There's no middle ground anymore. If you're in the middle, then you're an enemy of both. You're no longer the one looking for the reasonable answer, weighing the pros and cons. No, you're an enemy of both now. So this is what I mean when I say if I'm pissing off the left and the right, I'm doing something right, because I'm not just going, I'm in this bubble, and now on every issue I just default to whatever they say.
Well, I feel like even the right and left flex on depending on who you ask anyway, right? Like, I don't think...
they can do, but there's this weird militant subset of them that I think is larger than anyone's prepared to acknowledge that are fundamentally extremist.
Mm. What do you think about tearing down the statues of old God knows what, I guess? I don't even know if they really are.
It depends what you're trying to accomplish. If you're just trying to rile up the opposition... then great, mission accomplished. You've now got white extremists in the street beating the fuck out of peaceful protesters because a handful of yobbos decided that they'd hijack the protest to tear down statues. You want to talk about Churchill? Want to talk about Churchill?
In the context
of what's going on at the minute.
Okay, yeah.
So, again, people are just kind of ignoring the facts in favour of their own argument. So I got into a bit of a row the other day. I generally avoid talking to people I don't know on Facebook because it always ends up in a row. But I indulged against my better judgment the other day, and this guy was literally telling me that Churchill was worse than Stalin.
Oh, you know what? I know someone who thinks that Churchill was worse than the Cuban leader. I forget his name.
Che Guevara?
No, the one who... Fidel Castro,
yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was a...
Anyway. His justification was that Churchill committed genocide against India, or the people of India, whereas Stalin was committing genocide on his own people. And because Russians are predominantly white, and whites come from a position of power, the genocide against the Indian people... mattered more in a historical context.
Right.
But then on the other side of the argument, you've got people going, well, it doesn't matter what Churchill did because he got us through the war. Like, well, am I the only one here who thinks that context and facts matter? You know, maybe the shit that Churchill did in India does not excuse, or maybe the shit he did in World War II does not excuse the shit he did in India. Maybe having statues of him in the street is a little inappropriate given the way times have changed and people's views, etc. To say that Churchill said racist things, A, it's true, and B, means nothing in the context of the time. If we fucking rewind back to 1945, 1939, whatever you want to do, wherever you want to go, I guarantee you every single person was racist.
Yeah.
It was just a fact of life.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like you and I eat meat, right?
I do not.
All right, okay. Well, I eat meat, right? If I cured cancer tomorrow...
I eat meat every month. I apologize. Continue.
If I cured cancer tomorrow, I guarantee you in 200 years' time, there'd be a faction of people wanting to tear down my statue because everyone's gone vegan and they can't stand the fact that I ate meat. That's morally reprehensible. That should be torn down. It wasn't morally reprehensible today by most people's definition. But because times have changed, they can't quite understand the historical dissidence. So
I feel like that's a waste of energy, to be honest with you, to get so angry about things that happened 50, 70, 100, 200 years ago, especially individuals. And then they do the kind of argument, which is something like, well, the statue shows that we reverence or we remember this person and we look up to him when he was such a racist. Like, I don't know anything that's coming out of your mouth. It doesn't make any sense to me. I actually don't know what are you trying to say of substance? Like, nothing. Do you know what
you're
I mean?
Just repeating, like, the verbal diarrhea that's been programmed into you by your college professor.
Exactly.
So, if you, what is a statue at the end of the day? It's an effigy of a historical figure. Now, you either know who Churchill is and what he did, or you don't.
Yeah.
If you don't, odds are is you're a child. No, seriously, like, you know, choose that. You know, you could recognise the visual profile of Churchill pretty much anywhere. Mummy, daddy, who's that? The only real way you're going to change people's perception of Churchill and, you know, contextualise based on his entire career rather than just World War II is by education. You don't accomplish that by tearing down statues and burying the past. You know, was it not Churchill himself that said, those who fail to learn from the past are doomed to repeat it? Or did he just quote that?
Yeah.
So, you know, if you don't want them in a public space, I can kind of get... I get it. I'm not necessarily behind it, because I think it's useful having it there, even if you perhaps have a different interpretation of Churchill's history. Destroying it, I think, is a complete waste of time and is just really to appeal to yobbish behaviour. What I think might be an interesting compromise is moving it to a museum where, you know, rather than just kind of being presented with a war memorial so that people just dwell on what happened in World War II, they can actually see, you know, a full historical context of his life and what he did. I mean, India is a tricky enough subject anyway. That was a fucking powder keg waiting to go.
I've been to Churchill's house.
Was he nice?
Can't remember what it's called. And it was really, you know, really fascinating, really cool to learn about what he did and his life, and really nice house and grounds, of course. And I think there's a quote out there somewhere along these lines, but it you know, it rings for me, where those who try to rewrite history will fail to learn from it. And it just really scares me, to be honest with you. Really scary stuff, like trying to impede on my speech and trying to impede on my thoughts and our actions. But as soon as I start giving it oxygen, I just think, you know what? This is a bunch of angry 30-year-olds who studied philosophy 10 years ago. And I would rather just get on with my life, because I know that when I step out of that chamber, when I talk to most people, they seem fairly sensible, fairly non-extreme. Like, to be honest with you, I think part of the issue is that the better our lives become in terms of lifestyle, the easier it is to get angry about things that we never considered before. I mean, you know, we don't need to be angry about poverty anymore, generally speaking. On a wide population basis. So let's be angry about veganism, or, you know, or the killing of animals. That's the kind of thought process
as the standard of living increases generally, the more trivial issues become that people tend to take up a flag for.
Absolutely. And the better our lives become in terms of living standards, the higher the depression rate is and mental health issues. So I definitely think there's something there.
I mean, most sort of, I'm not talking about everyone who would dub themselves a feminist. I don't really like isms in general because it's kind of a catch-all term for people who almost always have different views. But, you know, anyone who tells me that the patriarchy is a problem in this country needs to fuck off until they've protested on the streets of Karachi. Most of them probably couldn't point to it on a map.
I've got to agree. I mean, are you seriously going to fight me right now about a false statistic on female pay, or are you going to liberate women who are genuinely oppressed physically or almost every way imaginable in countries like Saudi Arabia?
I should clarify, the statistic is not strictly speaking false. It's just deliberately presented in a misleading manner.
Yeah, it's taken, you're right. It's
the total earnings of the men in the US and take all the earnings of all the women in the US and then compare your two polls, divide one by the other. Yes, you get 66 cents on the dollar.
Without taking into account
if you have half a brain and a very, you know, child's understanding of how statistics work, you would understand that the context is completely lost in that equation and it's therefore useless. But, you know, coming back to your original question, which was how big has this movement gotten lately? It's always been there. It was many years ago that the president was touting that nonsense. Obama gave a speech where he cited this 66 cents on the dollar nonsense.
Right.
So it goes that high up. Now, whether he genuinely believed that or he was told to say it or he's just kind of trying to pander to a certain demographic, I don't know.
Yeah. Something I really want to cover with you. You educated me on a lot of my musical listening career, I'll call it. Introduced me to Metallica, Megadeth, the list goes on, okay? And we've seen many bands together, Download, etc., and we've had some great gigs. And I just wanted to really kind of, firstly, thank you for that education. But secondly, or I should say, and secondly, just discuss your musical listening habits, because I know that your mind is on such a swift pace sometimes in terms of your music that one day it's Metallica, next day it's Megadeth, next day it's Green Day, next day it's Devil Driver. It's constantly evolving in what you find interesting. I just wanted to discuss that process in your mind. Is it just a case of you get bored with it, or is it, I mean, what's kind of driving that?
I think my listening habits might have changed drastically since the last time we kind of hung out for any length of time. Because at the minute, I tend to kind of just go in phases. I'll stick an album on and just kind of lose myself in it for a bit of time. If it's any good, if it's crap, then it gets turned off. You know,
a new album that you haven't heard, or old albums, or
so at the minute I'm going through a bit of a Cold Chamber binge.
Okay,
you may have seen I've been posting some covers on Facebook.
I've got to be honest, mate, I don't even check Facebook much anymore.
That's fair. Well, you should check out my Facebook because it's got my friggin' covers on it, Nick, and you can be the third person to like a single one of them.
I will do that. I will do just that.
They're not gaining much traction, but I don't really care. I'm just kind of doing it for my own amusement.
100%.
As you know, I am between bands, so I'm just kind of finding any outlet I can, really. So, yeah, I'm on a bit of a Cold Chamber binge at the minute. I did find another band that I was quite impressed with when I saw Trivium at the UEA a few years ago. I think it was on the Silence in the Snow tour. Not my favourite album, so that was a bad start. But also, I think Matt was still not doing screams. Well, he blew his voice out. And I think on that basis, he'd kind of moved away from screaming. So when they came to make the album, he was like, well, what if we just tried doing an album without screams and see how that sounds? And it's all right if you like that sort of thing. It's just not, there's no tracks that grab me immediately and get me going apart from maybe the title track. So that was that tour. They also had this drummer whose name I can't remember, but he kind of finished that tour cycle with them, and then I think was finished or fired. Because they had the drummer who recorded that album with them. He left halfway through the tour cycle, and then they got this replacement who was gone before the next album was conceived of, from what I can gather.
Okay.
And it was not a good Monk. Performance. It was
the drummer.
Yeah, I don't know. Like he looked like he could probably play other genres reasonably competently, but it was like anything with fast double bass was almost like, you know, 15-20% over his capability in terms of the double bass specifically. And I don't know if he fucking set his cymbals up wrong or something, but his cymbals, the crash was like flying all over the place. And on certain songs in Trivium, they do a lot of riding on the crash quite fast. And if your crash is flying around all over the place, you can't really get that kind of sound going. So it looked awkward. It sounded awkward. And it wasn't right. particularly good. However, before they came on, there was this band called Heart of a Coward, whom I sent you a link for the other day, I think, and said, this is what I'm into. have a look at this. Which I think they play in like F standard. I think
okay.
From what I can tell, they play on 7-string guitars in a tuning that's one step lower than an 8-string would be.
Right, okay.
Because I think the low on a 8-string's a G. So they've gone down.
Do you not think there's a bit of silliness to see how low we can drop the string?
I mean, if you're making a meme video, then definitely. It's definitely possible to be silly with low tunings. However, this particular... The song I sent you, the album itself, Deliverance, is fantastic.
Okay.
And
so you're still into the heavy stuff, though?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I have a very short attention span when it comes to music. You either need to start smacking me right in the face within the first 30 seconds with sheer brutality, or I will just meander on to either the next track, or I'll just take the disc out entirely. And yes, I said disc. I buy discs.
What are your thoughts, James, on a lot of the music we grew up on? Will you listen to Metallica, etc., or does that bore you now because you just know it off the back of your hand, basically? I guess maybe you don't, but I assume you do.
I do more or less know it all off the back of my hand. You know, it's less. There's a certain thrill I get out of hearing a song for the first time and going, I don't really know what's coming up next. Thinking, ooh, that's clever. Ooh, quite like that. But you know, the classics are the classics, aren't they?
What was the band process like when you were knee deep in it? Did you enjoy it? Was it, you know, brackets dream come true or dream started, etc.? Was it
the what process?
The band process.
Oh, you're talking about when I was like with Apollo Stans or whatever.
Yeah.
To be honest, I don't really understand half of what went on.
In while you were in
there. Yeah, this is quite confusing for me. I'm not gonna talk shit or anything because I'm still relatively good with mates with, I'd say, at least half of the people in there. It's more a case of, you know, so and so would speak to whatever company, and by the time it got through to me, I've heard three different accounts of what's gone on, and I don't really understand the implications of any of it. And I was quite okay with that because I went into it saying, I don't really want to be too hands-on-y with the organisation of things. I'm happy to just play drums and write music. Let me focus on the music. You can worry about the business and shit like that. Apparently that was not okay, even though it was okay when I joined. But over time, I think they wanted me to do more stuff like that and get a bit more involved. And, you know, I wasn't doing that. And
How did you find the creative outlet when you were in there and producing a lot of music, or at least writing a lot of music and releasing the album and playing gigs?
Well, I mean, I write the drums for the most part. It's a bit of a weird project in that context, because initially when I joined, the songs were all done, basically. They weren't recorded, but they were demoed, and I don't think anyone had any real impetus to change them all that much. Then we got a new singer in, and he didn't do any screamo. So we spent a fair bit of time with him redoing the vocals. I ended up doing the screaming on the first album because the drums were already recorded and because I was the only one who could really scream at the time.
Was that hard on your voice? Did you find that hard?
Not if I did it sensibly. I didn't do any of it live because I was on the drums, and the parts I was playing on the drums were not ones I felt comfortable doing vocals at the same time as, in terms of coordination. So I spent a lot of time with the vocalist as well, just kind of working on melodies and stuff, because some of the parts he was like, you have to scream this. I'm like, well, not really. I've got a cool little melody that could fit in there. And then, you know, there'd be a bit of a back and forth, and it was cool. It's a cool little creative process. Second go round, I think we'd had another lineup change. So we had another new singer. That was a bit more, obviously everyone was having their input at that point, because the lineup, apart from Lex, had completely changed since the first one was sort of conceived of. So we were building something new from the ground up, which was pretty cool. We were basically just, you know, the guys would come up with some riffs and stuff and see what sort of fit together into sort of the bare bones, if you will, or skeleton of a song. And then we'd kind of look at arrangements and stuff. I'd put some drums over each of the riffs and we'd see what worked. And then once we picked out the song structure, we'd kind of just toss it off to Ryan and be like, you know, here you are, here's the song, make some lyrics. And there were a couple of songs where we were stuck for lyrics, but we just wanted a melody. And I ended up writing some of the lyrics for, I think, Supernova, which is one of my favorites off that record. Was a joint effort between me and Ryan. When we were writing lyrics, I'd quite often kind of, Ryan would know where he wanted to go thematically, but he didn't quite know how to start it off on some occasions. So I'd kind of come up with a line, or, you know, the first kind of rhyming couplet or whatever, and then I'd kind of toss it back to him and we'd kind of have a back and forth and sort of flesh it out from there. And there's one song though, which Jack wrote, I think, pretty much all the riffs for, it was originally called Jacked Up, and then I think they renamed it to Fired Up.
Jacked Up's cool.
Yeah, I liked it because it was like Jack putting his little stamp on it, because, you know, when you get Jack in his zone and get him creative, he kind of whips some good shit out of his sleeve. But that was more of a funky song. It had a very Skin Dread vibe to it, which I was digging. And they were like, we don't know really how we're going to put vocals to this. I said, well, I've got kind of a melody in my head. Shall I write like some joke lyrics just to give you an idea of what I'm thinking? They were like, yeah, do that. So I wrote from start to finish an entire song's worth of joke lyrics about running out of weed and getting angry and beating people up because you can't find any more. Which I don't know why that occurred to me at the time. So I wrote that from start to finish and handed it off to the lads, and Ryan liked it so much that became the final lyrics, pretty much. I think there were some changes here and there.